The planned summit next week between North Korea and the United States is big news for China. China and North Korea have shared history. In the early 1950s, they fought side by side against the U.S. military in the Korean War. China still shares a land border with North Korea. That means China would be the first to feel the impact if there's a conflict or upheaval on the other side of that border. The outcome of the Trump-Kim summit could also lead to changes for the U.S. military presence in Northeast Asia, and that could have an influence on long-term U.S.-China relations. David Rennie is the new Beijing bureau chief for The Economist.
The Chinese are very happy it's taking place. They were complacent for a long time about North Korea getting nukes because they figured the North Koreans weren't about to attack China with them. But it got very rough last year. You had a lot of tests. You had a lot of missiles being tested, a lot of nuclear devices being tested, and they figured it was getting out of hand. And they're very glad to see the only two people at the top of these two regimes, Donald Trump, Kim Jong-un, who can sort this out. China's got some nice, generous motives wanting this sorted out. They don't like having rogue states with nuclear missiles. They also have some quietly selfish motives. They would quite like to see a deal which leaves fewer American troops on their doorstep in South Korea. But they're watching carefully, and they've been guiding the North Korean leader about, I think, how to handle Donald Trump, because he's been twice recently to see the Chinese leader.
And how are those stakes for China coming up in state media there in Beijing?
It's a fascinating thing. So China obviously has a very strictly controlled state media, despite the fact that if you talk to Chinese officials, they admit that relations with America are on a whole range of fronts, from trade wars to security challenges in the South China Sea. They're pretty rough. If you read only the Chinese state media, the papers and the TV pictures that Chinese people see, you don't really get a hint of that. The propaganda machine is being pretty gentle on Donald Trump. They don't really criticize him. And a ton of ordinary Chinese people, they've got a pretty positive image. They think he's a big, successful, rich American businessman. He's tough. He knows how to get stuff done. And I think what people read into that is the fact that the Chinese propaganda machine is being gentle with Donald Trump suggests that the Chinese government is still hoping to do a deal with him. So they don't want to denounce him and then have to explain to their own public why they've just done a deal with someone that they were bad-mouthing. So you can sense they're kind of keeping their powder dry.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So do you see Chinese fingerprints on the events on the Korean Peninsula? Are they doing anything to kind of make the outcome of the summit a success?
Well, you see, for the moment, they're still controlling this. You know, the sanctions are being enforced. I think that the real crunch point will come when we know what sort of deal is done at this summit, if a deal is done. Because if, for example, the summit doesn't go well, in the kind of worst case where Donald Trump walks away from the table and says, I can't deal with this guy, he isn't serious, I want much tougher sanctions, we're going back to maximum pressure, every Chinese analyst and official that I have spoken to is absolutely clear, China is not going to go back to much tougher sanctions. They think that now Donald Trump is down this diplomatic path, that's the path that has to run now. And they're not going back to strangle North Korea to help Donald Trump out.
I mean, that kind of plays into the whole narrative of China taking on the mantle that the United States seems to be shedding at the moment, of kind of world stature.
It's a fascinating thing. So I left China after a first posting here 16 years ago. Back then, the America-China relationship was a big deal, but basically, you know, America was still much, much more powerful, much larger economy. And so the question was China going to become a bit more like America as it got richer? Was America going to try and contain China? So those were, you know, people talked about convergence and containment. Coming back 16 years later, the word that everyone is talking about is competition. Economic competition, but also military security competition. And you're right, Marco, a competition for who gets to set the rules for the 21st century. And there's a sort of mixed feeling here that Chinese officials are quite open, that they have plans to, you know, spread their wings, to try and set some rules for the global order. A slight sense when you talk to some of them that it's this opportunity to really step up and fill a vacuum left by America has come sooner than they were expecting. And some of them will say maybe too soon, maybe they're not ready. So it's a very strange moment.
So let me just ask you one thing about that. I don't want to end on a negative note here, but Professor Graham Allison has pointed out that historically when one power is rising and another is falling, there's a high probability of war. I mean, just this week, we almost had an incident as a couple of U.S. B-52s flew over one of those artificial Chinese islands. What are your thoughts on this high probability of war idea?
So one of the pieces of good news is that the Chinese read Graham Allison too. So this famous book of his, The Thucydides Trap, you know, quoting this example from ancient Greece, Chinese people talk about the Thucydides Trap all the time, and they don't want to fall into it. So I think if your worry is that people might blunder into a war because they don't realize how high the stakes are, don't worry about that. This is a moment where people are suddenly very conscious of how high the stakes are. And although China is very, as you say, swaggering, absolutely true, they're still really focused on getting rich. They're still really focused on lifting people out of poverty, fixing their own domestic problems. And so what's really striking is you can talk to Chinese officials and Chinese academics and business people about, you know, the big international questions like Trump and North Korea and stuff. But there's often a sense that they would like to get back to what they were planning to do, which is to clean up the air, clean up the water, get peasants, you know, into jobs that pay them a decent living. They've got a lot to do to modernize this country. And the world is calling them, but they're not quite ready to devote all of their attention to that.
David Rennie, the new Beijing bureau chief for The Economist. Thank you very much. Good to speak.
Pleasure.